Thank you for visiting HawkeyeDrive.com, your stop for Iowa football, men's basketball content, and welcome to the third edition this season of the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles, and once again, I'm joined by former Iowa defensive back Chris Rao. Break down here the first segment, the Hawkeyes game last weekend against Northern Illinois. Iowa found itself in a 17-9 hole entering the fourth quarter, managed to come back and win the game 18-17. Maybe not necessarily what everyone envisioned, how people envisioned the game going, but nevertheless, Iowa was able to get the win. They're 1-0. From what you saw last Saturday, Chris, what were your initial thoughts on the game and just how the team looked?
Actually, the thing that I got from the game is that pretty much the matchup that we talked about, the defensive line versus Northern's offensive line, was actually a good matchup. And also, I thought the defensive backs of Iowa versus Northern's receivers was a pretty good one. But it came down to that mobile quarterback. That mobile quarterback did a lot this past week against us. And you praise that guy for his game, and I'm sure he's going to have a good season down the line. But I like what Iowa did on offense, and I also liked what they did on defense. They played strong defense, as we thought they would, not giving up a lot of points, in which Iowa never does that much. But also, I like how they actually fed Bullock a lot this past game. And I'm kind of shocked how much of the passing game wasn't getting a flow into things, especially with CJ. I knew with the receiver it would be a hard game, but this was a really nice grind out game this week. Pat,
I'll say I didn't think it'd be to a point where the game would be in doubt for the Hawkeyes, but I kind of foresaw the way this game was kind of shaping out in terms of the offense having some of the struggles that they did have. You mentioned the passing game. There were some concerns there. James Vandenberg didn't have the best game by any means. They only threw for, it was 129 passing yards, but he didn't have any interceptions. To me, what I saw with Iowa is basically, at least offensively, it was what I figured might happen, which is they were able to move the ball effectively. The problem was when they got into the red zone, they found themselves settling for field goals. And that's something that, okay, maybe against a Northern Illinois, you can get away with that. But when you play games later in the season, you get into Big Ten play, that's not something that you're going to be able to do and expect to win. Defensively, like you mentioned, there were some times where I felt that the defense, there were some liabilities. You mentioned the Jordan Lynch, the Northern Illinois quarterback, having a big game. He had that huge 73-yard touchdown run. It seemed like a lot of the momentum that they had on offense came when Iowa would line up in a dime on third down, because that's when that play would be called. Once Iowa stopped using that and they kept to their basic 4-3 defense, I felt like they were able to bottle him up. They were able to bottle up Northern Illinois' offense as a whole. And then really the other thing, too, is just the play of the special teams. You know, not just Mike Meyer, the fact that he made 4 field goals and ended up being a Big Ten special teams player of the week, but you have a situation where John Winkie comes in and, you know, they ask him to pooch punt after Connor Kornbrass been the punter and taking the first few snaps. He has that play. Greg Castillo, at the end of that play, being able to down the ball at the one and give Iowa the momentum it needed there defensively. I mean, those are the things that you have to be encouraging for this team going forward. And again, it came down, like we said, to the defense, and they were able to step up when they really needed to, and it set up, you know, the game that you got, the touchdown drive that featured Damon Bullock's run. And as you said, he ended up having a really stellar game.
Yeah, I was going to say, it comes down to Coach Ferentz going to the guys that he sit there and feel comfortable about with, especially with John Winkie. It was kind of a shock in a way to me, but you know, you come down to guys like him being a senior coming in game or whatnot. Also, with Bullock, he played a good game. The guy is a very scat back. He reminded me a lot about what Damian Sims. Not too much, but the guy, he runs hard. He give everything he had. We seen a lot of durability in him, so we should not be sitting here and saying, hey, this guy going to break down the line, down the season. And also, with the receivers, I would just like to see a little bit more progression. But the 129 yards with James Vandenberg was kind of a shocker for me. I thought he'd throw for a bit more. Mm-hmm. But like you said, the defense, they don't give up much when it comes down to the red zone. But with Iowa not being able to punch the ball in the red zone was kind of a huge shocker with us. And one thing I was getting ready to say that I know neither one of us said so far is that I seen a lot of fans when I was out at the bars watching the game, since I wasn't able to watch the game back home. I sit there and people was like, oh, God, this reminds me of a Ken O'Keefe offense and things like that. And that was one thing I know that you probably realized also. And a lot of people sit there and gave Greg Davis a lot of problems in here, saying that he don't throw the ball deep and things like that. But this was a game where Iowa can sit here and get a feel for how they can move on to the next game against Iowa State this week and so on.
And, you know, to that point, I guess that leads to a question I want to ask you, is when you were watching this game and getting your perspective on it, how similar and how different would you say the offense looked under Greg Davis after one? I know you can only base it off of one game, but from what you saw and what you were able to observe your time as a player going up against Ken O'Keefe's offense in practice every day, what sort of similarities and differences did you notice?
I think the similarities that I see is that just like any Iowa team that I didn't see in the past before I played and actually when I played, and then this past game with Greg Davis' offense, it looked quite a bit just like Coach O'Keefe's offense, but James wasn't able to get in a rhythm to pass the ball. That's why I can't sit here and give you a full brief thing about how his offense is. We'll see this week, I'm sure, you know, with a stiffer competition with Iowa State. I think the run game, it looked very similar. That's a similar part that I see. I see that the offensive line, they own Northern's defensive line, and I like that a lot.
I'll say this. I think in the ground game, I agree. You know, and the O-line was able to have their way, and you saw it on that play. And, in fact, that they were saying afterwards that that was a play that they audibled into when they were in the huddle. Vandenberg called a pass and a run. They saw the coverage that they wanted from Northern Illinois, so that prompted them to want to run the ball because they tried that play earlier in the game on a few occasions where thought they maybe would be able to get a big run out of Bullock. Didn't quite happen, but there, the blocking was perfect. And I think it was Martin Manley that had a block on the safety that allowed that outside hole to be there, and he, you know, Bullock was able to cut to the outside and had nothing but green in front of him the rest of the way.
I was going to ask you one thing about the offense. Were you shocked upon how many carries Bullock had, and also about the rotation in general?
I was surprised. I think everybody was surprised by the fact that he had 30 carries. I think even Kirk Ferentz is surprised. I don't think that was something that he was expecting out of Damon Bullock, let alone anybody else that was at Soldier Field last Saturday. I figured that, you know, he'd probably get maybe like at about 15 carries, and I thought maybe if they were going to utilize him, it'd be more the way we all envisioned that he would and probably still will be through the course of the season in the short passing game. But, you know, I think the fact that it was Greg Garmon's first game, he was a true freshman, I think that maybe played into it as well. And you saw what Bullock was doing. He wasn't putting the ball on the ground. He was running forward and falling forward every time. I think he only had one carry where he had negative yardage or didn't have any yardage whatsoever. And it was one of those things that worked, but the passing game, it reached a point where they were behind, and this is where I do think the offensive line struggled, because Northern Illinois would blitz, and they weren't picking it up. And James Vandenberg, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that he had a great game, but it's not like every single one of those instances he had a whole lot of time to throw the ball.
That's right. I was getting ready to say, I wasn't shocked at all, because, you know, with any running back, if you have a rotation of running backs going into the game and things like that, you got a running back that catches a hot hand, but also just like you said, with Garmon being a true freshman and Bullock had seen some plays last year before his injury or whatnot. But I said, wow, this is, you know, it was a ground pound game, and he bust that big run at the end of the game. But I would say it's one of those deals, just like you said, the offensive line just need, you know, more time with picking up the blitz and things like that. And I was kind of shocked at the one sack that James took towards midfield.
If I were an Iowa fan, the one thing I would be encouraged by is a lot of the mistakes that you saw in this past game against Northern Illinois are things that can be easily fixed. And I think, and that's something that I was kind of getting at before, where I feel like right now is the time that you're going to be seeing a lot of those mistakes. I do think this offense is going to look a lot more crisp as the season progresses and they, you know, go through the weeks here where they're still learning the system. I think you'll see better games out of the receivers down the line. I don't know about this week necessarily, but eventually I do think that will be involved. And the one thing I will say too, you mentioned the tight end play earlier. I figured that they would be used a lot more than they were, especially when they did get in the red zone. There was that sequence in the second half. Joe Gaglione stripped the ball out. Carl Davis recovered a fumble. You're thinking, okay, Iowa's got the momentum now. And then they didn't even end up really looking that way, and they ended up having to settle for a field goal, remain down by one, and then that was right before the big run that Northern Illinois had that put them up eight.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say one more thing that you brought up, three tight ends. I was going to say that with bringing up the three tight ends is one thing that we're looking toward from last year that we had compared to this year was some veteran offensive linemen. You know, we lose a number one, not number one, but a first round pick in Riley Reeve. Then you have Adam Geddes, who was picked up by the Redskins, and Marcus Zusevich. So that was a veteran offensive line that we lost last year, and the tight ends coming in to help out with protection-wise and everything like that. So I just look forward. But with Iowa State coming up this week, you better not forget that Iowa State is going to come with the blitz a lot this week.
And one last thing I would say here regarding this game that happened this past weekend in Chicago. I mentioned Greg Castillo, and to me, he was kind of an unsung hero, if you will, not just because of that one play that he made, which was the play of the game by far for Iowa, but when you consider, too, the fact that B.J. Lowry got hurt in that game, and by the way, Lowry, Ferentz said that he's fine, so it sounds like he'll be able to play this Saturday against Iowa State, but Castillo came in there, and I'm sure a lot of people were thinking, okay, you know, they're concerned because they saw what happened last year early in the season. He ends up losing his starting job after that Iowa State game. But I thought he played fairly well. And the thing I would keep in mind, too, is that touchdown run that Northern Illinois got, that came after Lowry got hurt. So in that dime package that I mentioned, at that point in time, you saw Castillo being used as a dime defensive back, him along with, I believe it was Sean Draper, earlier in the game. But when Lowry got hurt, you obviously moved Castillo over, and then you're playing Draper and Kevin Buford. You're playing two true freshmen as your fifth and sixth defensive backs on the field, and I think that may have played a role, that along with some of the shoddy tackling that you saw, you know, especially in the first half and on that particular play. I do think that that's the one thing that the defense could get better is the tackling. But to me, I thought Castillo played fairly well on defense, and then, as I said, he made the big play on special teams.
Yeah, I was going to say something about Greg here right before you said something, but I'm glad that you brought it up, because I thought with Greg coming in, a lot of people in the bar was like, uh-oh, here we go. Let's not have this happen again from last year, you know, with Northern sitting here going to pick on Greg or whatnot. Greg came in as a senior, you know, he came in and took his came in just like any second man, the next man in, as we called it while we played, and they still do call it that. But with one thing we might see, I'm a, you know, with a lot of quotations about it, is that we might see the younger guys going outside and putting the older guys inside, because with the inside, it's kind of harder to check those guys inside, because they got an inside or outside release that they can actually do. So let's look forward to some of these freshmen going outside and actually guarding the number one or two receivers instead of the slots. But, you know, with any freshman, they have to be able to play inside and outside, and that's one thing Coach Parker is going to sit here and adjust with that also. So let's not forget that Coach Parker sees the same thing we see.
Moving along here, when you look at Saturday's game against Iowa State, and I mentioned that Castillo had his struggles in that game, as did the second. Actually, that's the game that prompted all the shifts in the secondary. You saw Tanner Miller come in at that point. Jordan Bernstein became a permanent starter. Sean Safety, Micah High moved back to corner. But the one thing that stood out from that game last year was the play of Steele Jantz. And being at the football complex on Tuesday, talking to Ferentz and talking to some of the players, it was clear that, you know, is even though Iowa State has plenty of weapons on the offensive side of the ball, he is the one guy that they're focusing on this Saturday, is especially given the game that he had. Now, I don't expect Jantz to necessarily put up the same numbers he did last year, which I believe was 25 of 37 and four touchdowns through the air. But he had a decent game against Tulsa last week. Iowa State won 38-23. And I got to tell you, the vibe I'm getting right now is that, you know, usually in past years you feel like, okay, Iowa talent-wise is a far better team, and that's what gives them an advantage. I almost feel like Iowa State may have closed the gap a little bit on that talent, and it's to a point where this game, for the first time in years, it seems like a toss-up that it really could go either way.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say, looking forward to this game. With Iowa State, I feel that this year's, just with our question marks, just like you said, Iowa State, more than likely, I think, is the best team going into this game. But because they have some phenomenal linebackers that we both know. Mm-hmm. And Steele Jantz gave us trouble last year. But like you said, Steele Jantz is not going to put up a game like he put up last year. And that was one thing about Iowa State have good going into this game. Still, a lot would be focused on him and his mobility and also his ability to pass the ball. But also see that Iowa shouldn't so much focus on that, because then next thing you know, you got an unsung hero as a tight end or a running back just sitting here running all over the place. But I look forward to this game, and Steele Jantz will, I'm sure, have a play a very good game.
And I'll say this, too. I actually think Jantz, I don't think the mobility is going to be as much of a thing this year, because I think his arm's better. And the other point that I would make is when you look at Iowa State's ground game, Shawnchell Johnson and James White, these are two guys that had big games against the Hawkeyes last year. White had that game-winning touchdown in the third OT. Johnson, I think, ran over 100 yards. They're both back in the backfield again this year. They both had decent games against Tulsa this past weekend. So that right there in and of itself is going to be a challenge. And then you mentioned defensively, you have guys like A.J. Klein, Jake Knott, two senior linebackers. It seems like they kind of feed – the entire defense feeds off of their energy. And I would imagine when you played, that was something that you saw too with some of the senior leadership that you were around.
Yes, I was going to say one thing about Iowa State. It's almost a mirror where – this year, you have Iowa State looking towards their defense to sit there and make plays and give a little energy to their offense this year, but whatnot. But still, Jantz, just like anyone said, he should be able to get his team going. And I think from the start of this game to the end of this game, it's going to be a close game. And if this signify what a lot of people look forward to, if this is a close game, this is going to be a nice defensive game.
Two questions I have for you as far as the rivalry itself goes. First of all, there's I'm sure you probably saw on Twitter or, you know, just heard about the fact that around the football complex there's pictures of Iowa State fans celebrating, the team celebrating last year's win over Iowa. They're hung up around the doors. There's posters that say that have the Iowa State slogan on there. It has their team schedule and what have you. How often when you played and you got ready for this game, how often would you see stuff like that? And how much of a motivational tactic is that for a player when you get bombarded with all those reminders of what happened before?
I was going to say, after my freshman year, actually, it was actually on my birthday, my true freshman year, where we lost to Iowa State at Iowa State or whatnot, and a lot of people going into the next year in the 06 season saying, hey, Iowa is not really sitting here taking this Iowa State team serious at all. So what happened was Coach Doyle took this in hand, where he took a lot of pictures in the summertime, different type of pictures, fans celebrating and things like that, and actually brought up a video, a very, very old video in the early 2000s where Iowa State had a couple wins in a row, and they just shown fans just going crazy and all kinds of stuff, and one of the Iowa State players had said something about the rivalry, saying that Iowa doesn't care and we love this trophy or whatnot. And you always get the motivation for every game. And Coach Doyle took that in and said, hey, we need to focus more of the in-house also along with the conference game. So every week they have something going on, but this week they really have a lot going on. They want this trophy back. It's one of a couple that they have this year, a chance of getting something back from losing pretty much everything that we have. But Iowa State is a big game, and we take this serious, and you'll see the guys go out there and play really hard.
So along those lines then, when you think back to when you played, obviously, you always have a one-game-at-a-time approach, and I understand it. But when you play a rivalry game like this, especially one where it isn't a Big Ten team, but this is an in-state opponent that, you know, the bragging rights are at stake, how much more gratifying is it when you win, and how much more, you know, painful is it when you lose a game like this?
I would say one thing that I realized, you know, coming in with a closed mind when being from Ohio, we sit here and we judge the team up north, as we call it, Michigan or whatnot. Here in Iowa is Wisconsin and Minnesota. But a lot of guys from different states didn't know much about the rivalry and things like that. And a lot of guys from Iowa say, hey, guys, let's shift this to Iowa State. It's not so much from where you're from, it's where you're at and things like that. And a lot of guys didn't really care about it. That was from out of the state of Iowa. And when you lose, it's a terrible loss. I can tell you that now, and it sucks. I think the loss of Iowa State – of any game, no matter how close it was or whatnot. I can't compare it to the Ohio State game that I played in for a Big Ten championship. But it's one of those losses you sit there and be like, wow, I got to sit with this 365 days until the next game. And it's an ugly one. It's quiet throughout the week, and you're just trying to find some kind of juice to actually get ready for the next game, because you have people from Ames and all over the place and some people from here from Iowa City that have bragging rights, and throughout that week until you actually beat Iowa State again or make some kind of win or go to the Orange Bowl or something like that, make those people be quiet, because they're going to be in your ear no matter what.
Right, and the reason I ask is because you, as you said, you've been on both ends of the spectrum. You played five years you were there. There were three games you played in Ames. You lost the first two of them, but then your senior year you won rather convincingly. And then the two times that you played them here in Iowa City, you got them both times.
I was going to say, another thing with it is just like when we win, it's like, yeah, we won. But a lot of Iowa people don't sit there and brag like Iowa State people. And I guess it's one of those things where a lot of people say that Iowa State is not used to winning and things like that. I don't look at it like that. I just feel that Iowa fans, they look at it like, hey, this is supposed to be our game, just like Iowa State look at it nowadays, where, like, they don't brag that much. I mean, it's usually the Iowa State and people sitting there laughing at you and like, hey, big brother, we got you this time. But it's one of the best wins ever, you know, but – once we win, it's business just like any other game going into the next week.
Just kind of going back to what we were both saying earlier here about how this has the feel of a toss-up game that really could go one way or the other, does the fact that this game's at Kinnick Stadium, is that play a bigger edge than maybe it would before, or is this still one of those situations where, as Kirk Ferentz said on Tuesday, it's just a matter of who's the better team on the field?
I think it just comes down to I pretty much figure that home field advantage, because Iowa State has a very good home field advantage, and what Coach Ferentz always say, the wind blows and circles like a cyclone or whatnot, and Ames never good to Iowa unless we play really, really good. But I think in this rivalry, let alone some of the players and the talent and things like that, and whatever team you get returning, it comes down to who has home field advantage or whatnot.
All right, Chris, I'll bring you back here in a little bit. But right now we'll take part in the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em. We'll discuss the games that we have listed this week. But before we do, I want to play an interview that I did earlier this week with Travis Hines. He's a friend of mine who works at the Ames Tribune, covers the Iowa State Cyclones, and just asked him a few questions, getting the Iowa State perspective as both teams prepare for Saturday's game. So I hope you enjoy that, and I'll be back here with Chris in a little bit. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast, exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm pleased to be joined this week by a good friend of mine who covers Iowa State for the Ames Tribune. His name is Travis Hines. Travis, how you been?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. I'm going to just first ask here. I know it's hard to assess a football team after one game, but given what you saw from Iowa State in their 38-23 win over Tulsa last Saturday, what type of assessment would you place on the Cyclones right now entering Saturday's game against the Hawkeyes?
Well, I definitely think they're feeling good about their game against Tulsa. Obviously, they have plenty to clean up, but I think they left feeling good about a couple of things. First, I think what they saw to steal chance is pretty much what they were hoping to get out of him, an accurate quarterback that really didn't make too many bad decisions. And then staying on the offensive side of the ball, they saw a healthy Chantrell Johnson, which they haven't seen for about a year now. And he looked like Chantrell Johnson from a year ago, quick, elusive, with the ability to make cuts and get outside. And defensively, I think they're a little concerned about how they were against the run, but overall, I think they get a passing grade on that side of the ball.
Just from your interactions with Iowa State fans, whether it be on Twitter or if you're just like walking around Ames, what seems to be the vibe that you're getting about Saturday's game?
Well, from fans, I think it's the same as it always is, a little bit of nervousness, but excitement, and, you know, people have fun with the week. I think the difference I see towards Saturday has really been with the players. You know, this will be the fourth Iowa State-Iowa game I've covered, and I've never seen Iowa State with this amount of calm confidence as I saw when we interviewed them yesterday. I definitely think confident going into a game against Iowa that they've been in the last 4 years. I think that has more to do with how they feel about themselves as a football team as opposed to, you know, Iowa struggling against Northern Illinois last week.
Well, it's interesting that you say that because I feel like not just this year, but you think back to the last, you know, few years that Iowa and Iowa State have played, the feeling's always kind of been entering this game, okay, Iowa looks like a favorite or, you know, looks like they're going to play the role of the favorite, whereas this time around it could legitimately be considered a toss-up one way or the other.
Absolutely agree. I mean, I think back to 2010, and you walked into that game wondering if Iowa was going to win the game in the first half, which they did. Mm-hmm. Last year, you thought maybe it was a little bit closer, but it still felt like Iowa was a definitive favorite. And if I think if this game wasn't being played in Kinnick, if it was at a neutral site, it would be a pick 'em game. I think these teams are very, very close.
You talked about steel chance earlier, and the one thing that Paul Rhodes said on the Big 12 call Monday that kind of stuck with me is he talked about how he was a more composed quarterback than he was at this time a year ago. Just given everything that Steel Jantz has gone through, this is a two-part question. One, do you agree on that assessment of him being a more composed guy? And two, where do you feel what other areas do you feel he's gotten better from the last time that he went up against Iowa, which, by the way, that was probably the best game he played all of last season?
Yeah, to address the first part of the question, I do think he's a more composed quarterback. I think that comes from just having been a Division I starter and seeing the game, you know, for seven or eight times out there where you just, in the cliche, is the game slows down. But I think that has some merit where you're just out there and you know what to expect. You know what getting a hit from another Division I player feels like. You just get a sense of everything. And I think, you know, for Steele, what's important is that he, you know, makes good decisions, and, you know, being able to see things clearly and, you know, be able to make your read, I think, is important. And I forgot the second part of your question already.
Oh, the second part is just what other areas have you noticed that maybe he's become a better quarterback from the last time that he went up against Iowa, which even though that was probably the best game he played all last season?
Yeah, that was, I think, unquestionably his best game. But since then, I think he understands the offense more. I think Courtney Messingham, who stepped in for Tom Herman as the offensive coordinator, has made things easier to understand. I don't know if simpler is the right word, but I get a feeling from Steele that he's more on the same page with Courtney than he was with Tom. And I also think, you know, he was healthy for the Iowa game, so in that respect, there's no change. But it's unquestionable that foot injury that he had against Connecticut really inhibited what he was able to do going forward, and it was a big reason he lost that starting job. I think him being healthy is paramount to his success because he's not a guy that wants to sit back in the pocket and hold out for his routes to come. He wants to get out of the pocket, move, create a little havoc, and hopefully his receivers can break off from coverage and get open for him. That's what he likes to do. I think that's what he's comfortable doing.
Switching over to the defensive side of the ball, you mentioned that they had some concerns about the run, but the two guys I want to ask you about are the two seniors they have at linebacker, A.J. Klein, Jake Knott. Both of them had huge seasons last year, were among the Big 12's top leading tacklers. They both had big games against Iowa last season. And with them both being seniors, it almost seems like they're not only the unquestioned leaders on that side of the ball, but it seems like the other guys feed off of their energy and what they bring to the field.
I think, you know, what they bring to the field is kind of a no-nonsense business attitude. Both those guys are very serious when it comes to their craft and going out there and really setting the tone of toughness and hard-nosed football that, you know, it's kind of an old-school linebacker feeling. And when you think of the great linebackers both now and in the past, you think of those no-nonsense tough guys. And both those guys are like that, and they both bring I think AJ maybe is a little bit more vocal, but I think Jake is one of those guys that really does lead by example. And that example is something that the other guys, I think, know they have to live up to, especially with the fact that those guys have been doing it for 3 years now.
Now, you look at Iowa State's schedule, and they get into Big 12 play. It's a very deep conference this year, top to bottom, the additions of TCU, West Virginia. So with all of that in mind, and considering the fact that Iowa State did win last year's game when they played Iowa, what would a win on Saturday against the Hawkeyes mean to Paul Rhodes and to this team going forward into the rest of the season?
I think a win on Saturday Saturday makes getting to a bowl game, you know, clearly not a certainty, but it definitely makes things a little easier on them. You know, in all 3 years, the 2 years they've gone to the bowl game, they've just gotten to the 6-win mark. So they're walking a tightrope to get there. I think starting 2-0 makes things a lot easier, and I think it would also show that maybe that they've got a chance to get off that 6-win mark and maybe bump up to 7 and 8 if things go crazy. But I definitely think getting a win against Iowa, starting 2-0, is just huge for them to try to make a bowl game with that schedule. I mean, the Big 12 from top to bottom, I think maybe Kansas is the only game where you can say they've got it. Every other game, they're either going to be the underdog or it's going to be, you know, close to a point flip.
And I'll get you out of here on this. What, as far as Saturday's game is concerned, what do you believe has to happen for Iowa State in order for the Cyclones to get out of Kinnick Stadium with their first win over Iowa there since 2002 and their second win overall in a row over the Hawkeyes?
Well, I think they need to stay true to who they are, which is a balanced team that uses the run to set up the pass. I mean, when I say that, I also mean you saw a lot of those short wide receiver screens and flare passes on Saturday. They need to utilize that to control the tempo and control Kinnick Stadium. There was a lot of talk from the guys that had been there 2 years ago about how tough of a place it is to play, and I think if they turn the ball over or if they get a lot of three and outs, that's going to whip that crowd into a frenzy, and it's going to make it really tough for them to get into a rhythm and score some points and, you know, keep their defense off the field as much as they can.
It's Travis Hines from the Ames Tribune. You can follow him on Twitter, at TravisHines21. Travis, thank you very much for the time. And when we come back, Chris Rowell will rejoin me, and we'll discuss this week's games on the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em. So hang tight. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Talking Hawks podcast exclusively on HawkeyeDrive.com. I'm Brendan Stiles. I'm rejoined here by Chris Rao. And, Chris, are you ready for the pick'em this week, considering last week you went 7-3, which is pretty respectable, but I got all 10 games right, including the three that we disagreed on.
I'm actually ready for this week. This week was a harder pick for me because we got some pretty good games going on this week, and a lot of games you can sit here and toss up and things like that. But I look forward to this week looking at the paper-wise and everything. This can be a 7-3 or a 3-7 week for myself, so I'm ready for this week.
All right, and before we begin, I just want to remind all of you that you can participate in the HawkeyeDrive.com Pick'em. All you have to do is go to the homepage. You'll see 24 Heisman Row at the top. Hover over that. Click on the Pick'em page. The list of 10 games is right there. Submit your picks, HawkeyeDrive@gmail.com. Remember to include a score or Iowa State pick. I'll use that in the event of any ties. We didn't have a tie last week. We had one person who went 9-1. His name is Blaine Kupka. Congratulations to him on winning the pick'em. Your prize will be on the way. And without further ado, let's get into this week's games. We'll start with a game happening Saturday morning at 11 a.m. Central, featuring Miami against Kansas State, who comes in ranked 21st. Both teams are 1-0. Miami actually played a conference game last week at Boston College, won that, I believe, by 9 points, and then Kansas State handled Missouri State. These teams played each other last year down in Miami. K-State ended up winning. It had a huge goal line stand at the end of that game, and to me, that kind of jump-started the season they ended up having, because the following week they beat Baylor, RG3, and then from that point on, things just began to roll for them. They end up winning 10 games, go to the Cotton Bowl against Arkansas. As far as the rematch this year being played in what they call the Little Apple, Manhattan, Kansas, how do you see this one shaking out?
I figure that this game is going to pretty much be cliche from last year's game. It's going to be a really tough game. I like what Miami's running back did last week.
Duke Johnson,
against,
true freshman.
Yeah, and you sit here and feel good about yourself, but K-State has one of the better quarterbacks, I believe, this year going into this season. A guy just like a Tim Tebow type of guy. K-State has a phenomenal defense, as we know from last year. Will the defense show up this week? I pretty much pick Miami to win this game on the road. This would be a big game for them, and also it can pretty much give a springboard to their season. So I'm picking Miami. I like K-State, but I figure that Miami, it's time for them to roll, that they see Florida's doing good this year. And Florida State doing good. So Miami don't want to be the little brother of the three schools down in Florida.
I I'm actually going to go with Kansas State here for some of the reasons you mentioned. I agree with you on Colin Klein. I think he's a very good quarterback, and I think he's probably still maybe even one of the more underrated quarterbacks there is in the country. I think people know about him more now, but as opposed to a year ago. But I still feel like, you know, compared to some of the other quarterbacks that you see in the Big 12, he's not necessarily the first name that's going to come out to that's going to jump into your mind. But I think between that and really just you look at their defense, as you said, it's still pretty stingy. I don't expect it to be any different. I think Miami, you know, it's one thing to beat a team like Boston College like they did last week, but to go on the road against a top 25 team that's coming off a 10-win season, has some key pieces back, I just don't see it. I'm going to go with the Wildcats at home. Moving on now to a game in the SEC that really has big implications if you think about it. Features Auburn and Mississippi State. The game's being played down in Starkville. Auburn coming off a tough loss to Clemson last week. They hung in there with them, but Clemson was able to pull away 26-19. Mississippi State coming off a win, I think it was over Jackson State. This game, I mean, usually these teams meet at the beginning of the year. They've played close games in recent years. I know 2 years ago, the last time they played in Starkville, that was the year Auburn won the national title. They, I think, won 17-14, and then last year Auburn won. To me, I know the Tigers are still kind of depleted and there's still a lot of questions surrounding Auburn, but the reason I'm going to go with them here, even though it's a road game for them, is just you look at Mississippi State, it seems like the one thing that they haven't been able to accomplish under Dan Mullen is beating the teams in their division that they should, that they need to be if they're going to be, you know, respected in the SEC. Teams like Auburn, Arkansas, LSU, Alabama, he hasn't beaten any of them. He did beat Florida a couple years ago, but that was when Florida was beginning to nosedive and Mississippi State got on the rise. But you got to beat the teams in your division if you're going to have any shot at winning the SEC. And until you actually see that, even if this game's at home, I just have a hard time picking them to win this game. So I'm going to go with Auburn. And I think they'll bounce back after knowing that they were able to hang with a team like Clemson.
I agree with you. I'm going to go with Auburn also, but it's a couple storylines that's going into this game with their receivers coach resigning and coach, the former coach of Minnesota is pretty much taking over at the receivers. But I also feel that...
Yeah, Mississippi State, yeah, Tim Brewster.
Yes. I was going to say with Mississippi State, just like you said, they play hard early in these big games that we sit here and look at against the LSUs, the Auburns, the Floridas, and things like that. But then it comes down to where they just completely falls apart. Yes, it's a home game. I like what Auburn did last week. And one thing that I seen last week that I was kind of impressed, and I'm sure neither one of us known, was that Auburn's starting quarterback was actually converted to a quarterback, and he didn't play under snap at all in high school, which is kind of scary. So that's just one of those deals where that was pretty impressive. They play a very impressive game overall against a very tough team in Clemson who didn't have Sammy Watkins. So I'm going to Auburn just because they're a tough team. I feel that they're back, and they should be able to bring a big, big road game still.
And I'll just add this in here, too. I mean, there's obviously a lot of pressure on Mississippi State to win because they haven't proven they could beat these teams. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Auburn to win this game, too, because you consider you don't want to start 0-2 and then, you know, be entering the meat of the SEC schedule. You're still going to have to play LSU, Arkansas, Alabama at the end of the year, as they do. I'm Georgia, they got to play later in the season. I mean, you lose this game, you're talking about maybe a 6-6 season. So there's definitely pressure on Auburn in that front. And the one thing I would keep in mind, too, with this game, whoever wins – let's say Iowa does end up in a Florida bowl game. This could be a potential opponent, you know, whoever wins this game on Saturday between Auburn and Mississippi State. Moving along now to a game that I find very intriguing. Going on in South Bend, Notre Dame moved into the top 25 last week after destroying Navy over in Ireland. They're ranked 22nd now. They're at home against the Purdue team that we both think is a dark horse in the Big Ten. How do you see this one shaking out?
My biggest question with this game, I know with Notre Dame winning, beating Navy overseas there, is the quarterback. Who's going to be their quarterback? I know Tommy Reese is their quarterback or whatnot, but this quarterback they had.
Golston, who played okay.
I think he played. That's what I was getting ready to say. Mm-hmm. He played okay, but will Golston actually see any playing time is my question. I like what he played, and, you know, with fans and things like, hey, this guy played pretty decent, but he played against not one of the better teams or whatnot. But I like what Purdue's doing in Purdue, but I'm going with Notre Dame just because Notre Dame has they've shown that they have a nice defense, and with their leader, Teo, being their leader. Mm-hmm. But Notre Dame's running back, hopefully we find someone to run the ball once again this week. So I look for Notre Dame to win this game at home.
And, you know, it's interesting because Purdue has some questions at quarterback right now, too, because Caleb Turbush is expected to be back and in the starting lineup here Saturday. But he had that suspension. Robert Marv came in and played very well for him against Eastern Kentucky. I'm going to say I like Purdue in this game for two reasons. And I realize it's in South Bend, but I'm going to take Purdue for two reasons. One, to me, this is a game that is going to signal just how good of a team Purdue could be this season. If the Boilermakers are able to win this game, I think it sets up for them in the sense that they could win, you know, eight or nine games this season. Whereas, you know, as far as if they lose this game, maybe they still stay as like a 6 or 7 win team. So I think there's incentive there. But also, going back to Notre Dame playing in Ireland, I don't think the question was so much going over there to play the game. It's coming back and getting reacclimated to everything. And the fact that, you know, you see NFL teams, they usually when they have that game in London, they get their bye week the next week. And even Navy, they have a bye this week. Notre Dame, yes, they get the game at home, but they got to go right back to practice. They got to go right back to watching film after that long flight and getting reacclimated to everything in South Bend. I'm sure the crowd, they'll have the crowd support and everything being at home. But I just think this is something that it's going to make it hard for them to get through practices this week. And I have a feeling that how they practice is going to end up showing in this game against a Purdue team that is better than Navy. And I think Purdue just makes enough plays at the end to pull it out.
I was going to say, this game is pretty much circled on both teams because it's a rivalry. Mm-hmm. Purdue's sitting here, like you said, they're looking at, hey, this can be from where we can be a six, seven game win team. And then you look at Notre Dame, they're saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, we can be a better team if we beat a pretty good team with Purdue coming in here this week. And I don't feel that with Notre Dame traveling, it's going to be a big deal, just like you said, because they're going to have their fans, and their fans, just like with Iowa, they're ready to see their teams come back home, and they're going to be there and cheer them guys on to a victory.
I guess I should clarify, like, how I'm saying this. What I'm just trying to say is, obviously, by that point in time, by Saturday, it's been a week, but when you come back from a game like that, you're getting reacclimated to time zones, and then you have to consider the fact that, okay, you go into your regular routine that you have during the week where you're watching film on Sundays, you're going through meetings, you have your practices, you deal with the media, you go back to, you have classes again that you start up, and, you know, you're dealing with all of these things. I feel like they're going to have a hard time catching up to getting back on track with all of that stuff, and I think that's what's going to ultimately carry over into Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Moving along here now to a very intriguing game. And it's funny to say that this is an SEC game, but it is, because Texas A&M playing their first ever SEC game, and actually playing the first game of the season because their game at Louisiana Tech last week was postponed due to Isaac. But they get Florida at home. Florida's ranked 24th in the country. They beat Bowling Green last week. They settled on a quarterback. Driscoll is going to get the start for them. They had a 2-QB thing going last week, but now Driscoll's proven himself as the number one guy. This game is in College Station. It's obviously going to be a crazy environment with game day there and everything this week, and this being A&M's first game in the SEC. Does A&M look impressive in their debut, or is this a game that you see Florida, you know, being able to win on the road?
This game has a lot of question marks about it. One, watching Florida struggle throughout playing against Bowling Green, but I think what every team plays MAC teams, they usually struggle against those teams, because I think what the MAC teams, they're really good when it comes to playing against these bigger teams. Also, with Texas A&M, they have a new system. They haven't played and they haven't been challenged or anything, so we don't know how their system is going to sit here and play against Florida. But then you sit here and say, hey, is Florida ready for this air raid and against Texas A&M? And with the game being at home, helps them out a lot with that game being wiped out last week. But I'm going with Florida. I'm going with Florida because I think that their system is pretty good, and also that we don't know what Texas A&M defense will bring. And I know I sat here and talked about Texas A&M offense, and it hasn't been tested against a defense just like Florida. So I'm going with Florida. I really think they'll win impressively.
I agree with you on Florida winning this game, but the thing that I will disagree on is I think the fact that A&M didn't play last week actually hurts them. And the reason I say that is because I feel like if they had gotten a game under their belt, even if regardless of the outcome, I feel like it would have helped them as far as knowing what they still need to do. Because the way you got to look at it is Florida's defense is going to be a lot better than what Louisiana Tech puts out there. Here with this game, I think that's what the story of the game is going to be more so than anything. I think Florida is going to be re-energized by the fact that they finally settled on a quarterback. But I think it's the play of the defense that, you know, is going to stand out here. And it's going to be the difference in this game to me. That's why I like the Gators to go into College Station and get the victory. Moving along now to the primetime games here. Game Saturday night down in Death Valley over at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. LSU, number 3 in the country. They stayed there after winning against North Texas last week. They're playing Washington at home. Washington coming off a win over San Diego State. Been a decent team the last couple of years. They were in the Holiday Bowl 2 years ago with Jake Locker. They beat Nebraska that game last year. They went to Alamo Bowl, and they had that shootout with Baylor and RG3. To me, I like Washington. I think they're a middle-of-the-road team probably in the Pac-12. It's obviously going to be tough for them with teams like Oregon and Stanford in their division and obviously USC in the conference. But with this game, Keith Price, I just have a feeling he's going to struggle against that defense that LSU has. And with this game being in Death Valley, I just have a hard time seeing LSU losing this game at home, especially with it being played at night. So I'm going to go with the Tigers.
I was going to say, if Washington want to do anything this year, period, to show the nation that they're a very good team, and also with a lot of people sitting here pumping up Keith Price with their season, they need to show up well. And regardless of win or loss, if it's going to be an upset this week of any game, I think it would be this game. But I'm not picking Washington. And I was going to say one more thing that I thought was kind of funny I seen on Twitter yesterday was that Washington's coach actually brought a real tiger to their practice stadium and let them practice around the tiger or whatnot. And I thought it was – but the game being at night at LSU, it's kind of hard to sit here and see Washington winning. But at the same time, I think if it's going to be a big-time upset, it's this game. And it will sit here and alert the nation of the SEC, and not only that Washington will be a middle-road team. They can sit here and, hey, USC and Oregon, we're pretty legit.
And I'll say this for Washington. I do think that this game in the long run is going to benefit them, because while neither of us see them winning this game, we both like LSU, but for them, the fact that they do have to play teams like Stanford and Oregon and USC, I think they have to go to Oregon, but they get Stanford and USC at home. I think this is the kind of game that's going to suit well for them in the long run, just in terms of dealing with that big game environment that they're going to be facing when they get into conference play. Moving along now to, and there, this is one of three Big Ten Pac-12 games that are going on this weekend. But this is probably the big one because it features Nebraska, who moved up one spot in the polls, ranked 16th after beating Southern Miss last week. They're going out to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena to take on UCLA, who's coming off a pretty convincing win over Rice in Jim Moore Jr.'s debut as Bruins head coach. This game's in Pasadena, and Nebraska, there's questions regarding Rex Burkhead, if he'll be able to play or not, because he had a sprained MCL last week. As far as this game goes, I don't expect Taylor Martinez to throw 5 touchdown passes again like he did last weekend. I was quite surprised when I saw that. But I think he'll do just enough. And even if they don't have Burkhead, I have a hard time seeing Nebraska lose this game, particularly because I think their defense is going to be the key here. I don't see UCLA putting up 55 points on Nebraska like they did Rice last week. And I just feel like this is a game where the defense is going to be the cowbell, if you will, for the Cornhuskers. And I think Taylor Martinez just does just enough. They win the turnover battle, and they get out of there with the victory over the Bruins.
I was going to say the same thing. I agree with everything you said, but I figure that if UCLA is going to be in this game, they need their defense to step up big. And I feel that Taylor Martinez more than likely will have a good game. It's just like you said, with Rex Burkhead being in or out, but I figure that he's probably going to try to give it a go throughout this week, and coach would sit here and be like, hey, yay or nay towards the end of the week. But for UCLA, just like Washington, this is a big game for them, and this is a put-up or shut-up game for them. With Nebraska, I figure that this can solidify their schedule, sit here and give the Big Ten going down the line, like, hey, they played a very good road-tested game. UCLA has a good running back themselves also, but I don't think he'll run route on Nebraska defense, just like you said, at all. I'm picking Nebraska to win this game, and I see them winning big.
Now we go back into the SEC here for another team making its SEC debut, and that's Missouri. They left, like A&M, they left from the Big 12 and they're in the conference this year, and they have a big game Saturday night at home against Georgia, who is ranked 7th in the country. And the storyline here is with Georgia, because we don't know quite yet just how this is going to play out with the suspensions. They have at least two players that are for sure suspended for this game because they had two-game suspensions. But the bigger deal is the guys that were suspended last week, but we don't know if their suspension is going to continue or not. Mark Rios kind of kept this under wraps. And it's with two of their better players on the defensive side of the ball. Bakari Rambo was a first-team All-American last year at safety, and then Alec Ogletree at linebacker. To me, it's hard to pick this game right now because we don't know what's going to happen here. I feel like if these guys were suiting up from Georgia, then I wouldn't necessarily see them having a problem winning this game. But if they're not playing, and I'm kind of under the suspicion that they might not, I actually like Missouri. Even though I think it's going to be challenging, I actually like Missouri to win this game. And I'll tell you who I think the X factor is going to be. A lot of people talk about Franklin at quarterback and TJ Moe at receiver, but the big-time freshman they got, Dorial Green-Beckham, I think this is the game that he lights it up, especially if Georgia is depleted in their back seven with the suspensions they've been dealing with. I think this is the game where he kind of has his coming-out party, if you will, and you know, he ends up being the reason why Missouri pulls this upset. I like the Tigers to get it done at home.
I like Georgia on the road. The reason why I like Georgia on the road is just because they settled in on their running back with another true freshman this year. He looked pretty impressive last week. No, it's not a Missouri team that they play, but at the same time, I think Missouri defensive tackle sat there and gave Georgia a lot to sit here and work towards, and this guy basically pretty much slapped the SEC in his face. And I don't think just Georgia, but also just the whole SEC sitting here saying, hey, this is just another regular game or whatnot. But it's hard to sit here and see that Missouri is sit here and win this game. But, I mean, with the game being in Columbia and at a night game, Columbia has a lot of magic at night, I realize, in the past or whatnot. But I really see Texas A&M and Missouri taking a nice little baptize just like Nebraska did in the Big Ten last year. But it's hard for me not to see Georgia actually win this game and to sit here and tell Missouri, hey, this is still the SEC.
And regardless of how this game plays out, I think for Georgia, too, the one thing that's going to have to happen is Aaron Murray's got to have a huge game for them at quarterback, considering the environment that they're going to be going up against, as well as the defense. But just knowing what that atmosphere is going to be like down there in Columbia on Saturday, I have a feeling it could be very surreal. Moving along now to Big Ten SEC battle that's happening over at Ryan Field in Evanston. You have Vanderbilt against Northwestern. Northwestern won by the skin of its teeth last week against Syracuse, 42-41. And they had their backup quarterback, Trevor Siemian, was the one who threw the game-winning touchdown pass after Kane Coulter got hurt in that game. Vanderbilt coming off a tough loss to South Carolina. They hung with them at home last week, but South Carolina was able to win that game in Nashville. They go on the road for this game. I don't know about you, but I like Vanderbilt here, and the reason why is, one, I'm curious to see what ends up happening with Northwestern if they do get in a close situation. Even if Coulter's healthy, if they felt that Siemian was a guy that was going to lead them to victory last week in that circumstance, you know, why wouldn't he in any future circumstance, or is Coulter going to go back to being the guy? I think that's a question Northwestern's going to have to deal with internally. And with Vanderbilt, even though they lost that game last week, I think they gained a lot of confidence knowing that they could hang with anybody. And they have a decent quarterback in Jordan Rodgers, who, oh, by the way, if you haven't heard, his older brother's Aaron. But I think Vanderbilt bounces back. They find a way to bounce back. They get it done on the road. I like them to win this game over Northwestern.
I agree with you. I'm going with Vanderbilt. They played a great overall game against a very talented South Carolina team. South Carolina quarterback. He was hurt throughout the game. Marcus Lattimore played pretty good. He didn't play as effective as I thought it would against Vanderbilt. But let's not forget this quarterback situation, mm-hmm. Northwestern. Kane Coulter actually pulled himself out of the game.
Right.
That questions and sets a lot of alarms for a lot of people, like, hey, is this guy hurt or not? That was actually a big game last week, mm-hmm. believe it or not. For a lot of people sit here and be like, wow, Northwestern are actually playing two stiffer opponents. You know, I mean, they're not the best opponents, but against Syracuse, who's been trying to move up the ropes, and I think they won a share of the Big East last year, and then now it's Vanderbilt, who's a team that proved to us last week that they might be a team to sit here and be reckoned with. They're not a pushover team that they have been over in the past years, but this is a game of two teams that have a lot of smart guys on the field, but I like Vanderbilt winning on the road. This is a very good victory for them moving forward.
All right, and then one more game here is being played late at night Saturday, featuring, and this is the third year in a row they're playing each other because 2 years ago they met in the Alamo Bowl, and then last year they started a home and home. Oklahoma State, who's ranked 18th in the country, coming off a game where they won 84-0. They were a 67.5-point favorite, so they actually covered that spread. They're going up against an Arizona team that's now coached by Rich Rodriguez. Arizona beat Toledo in overtime last week at home in his coaching debut. They feature quarterback and Matt Scott, who took a red shirt last season because of Nick Foles. He's actually a guy that you went up against when you played Arizona your senior year. Look, with Oklahoma State's manhandled Arizona the two times they played, including last season, that might have been the game that really, you know, made people realize, okay, Mike Stoops, he may have lost this program completely. I think Arizona will keep it close for a little bit since they're at home. And I think they'll have some of that momentum from winning in overtime last week, I think, will carry over. But and Oklahoma State, they do have a true freshman at quarterback, but I think this is where Joseph Randall steps up, has a big game for the Cowboys at running back. And I just see this being a game. Maybe they don't win by, like, 30 like they have the last couple of times, but I see Oklahoma State going on the road and winning this game probably, you know, by, like, you know, two touchdowns, maybe by, like, 17 points, maybe even three touchdowns. But at the end of the day, I just think the Cowboys are a slightly better team, and I don't see them losing.
I was going to say, with Oklahoma State versus Arizona, it's one of those deals where you sat there and looked at Arizona, and you sit there, and this game went into, like, really, really late at a night. Versus Toledo, and you see him like, wow, another big team struggling against a MAC team. Like I said earlier, I don't see that they struggle, but I think that they're going to be outplayed by Oklahoma State, even though, like you said, they have a phenomenal true freshman quarterback coming in. I see Oklahoma State actually winning by 20 points.
Mm-hmm. That is about what I could see it being as well. And now finally, the game that I'm sure you've all been waiting to hear our thoughts on. Iowa State, games at Kinnick Stadium, Saturday afternoon, 2:30 p.m. kickoff, Central Time. It's on Big Ten Network for those of you who aren't going to be at the game. Chris, I'll just flat out ask you, how do you see this game playing out, and do you see Iowa being 2-0 when it's said and done, or is the Cy-Hawk Trophy going to remain in Ames?
I look at it like this. This week, this is a big game overall for the state of Iowa, for the players on both sides, and also the people that attend the game and also can't attend the game watching the game on TV. This game is going to be defined by the defense, as any other game that both teams play. We won't see many air raids like we've seen last year or whatnot, where Iowa State sit here and put up a lot of points, and Iowa also. It's going to be a good game, and a lot of people are going to be frustrated this week, and the frustration is always there with this game. I see Iowa winning this game, close game, and I figure the first team to 17 points win, and I think it will be Iowa just because it's the game at home. James Vanderbilt will be ready to come back home, and the receivers will be ready to roll just like our tight ends. Our defense will be pretty stout just like Iowa State. Still, Jantz doesn't get his way like he had last week and last year, so I look for the Hawks to win, and go Hawks.
I like Iowa State to win this game. I know a lot of people are going to hate me for that, but I'm just being honest. From what I've seen and from what I've been hearing all week, the way that this is coming down to me, I do think it will be a close game. I would actually say first to 20 wins, and I got Iowa State winning 21-17. And basically, this is what I see it coming down to. One, going back to what I said before about the offense, I do think that the struggles are still going to be there this week. And as you've pointed out to me on numerous occasions, Iowa State's a team that loves the blitz, and they're going to be sending the house to James Vandenberg. And if the offensive line struggles at picking up the blitz here like they did last week against Northern Illinois, I have a feeling Iowa's going to really struggle moving the football, period, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on this on that Iowa defense. To me, I think the Hawkeyes have to basically do three things if they are going to win this game. One is the obvious thing being, you know, to keep contained and not allow Steele a chance to break out to the outside, because that's what killed them last year. Two, they, and this is a big one for me with the offense, is the yards after catch, because they were not getting that really against Northern Illinois. They got to be able to do that against Iowa State, especially when they do send the blitz, and because we know that Iowa's going to rely on the short passing game. This is where I feel guys like Keenan Davis, Kevontae Martin Manley, even tight ends C.J. Fedorowicz, they all have to step up and have huge games. And then third, and this is the obvious one, winning that turnover battle, because this is something that Iowa didn't do last year, and it cost them big time. You know, when you think back to the fumble that Marcus Coker had right before halftime, Iowa State, you know, was able to respond, get a touchdown. That changed the whole complexion of that game, because it went from Iowa being in kind of in control to suddenly you got a game, and then all the other breakdowns began to take place. And right now, I think Iowa State, as I mentioned before, they're a team that's closed that talent gap, if you will, with this team. They seem pretty confident about their chances, and they should be, considering they won last year. I do think the fact that this game's a kink helps Iowa, but at the end of the day, I just feel like Steele Jantz, it's not so much, you know, the big plays, it's just being consistent, being more crisp like people have been saying he has been so far going through fall camp in this past weekend. I think that plays a role. I think Iowa State's going to be able to move the ball. And again, it comes down to if Iowa struggles offensively, a lot of the pressure is going to be back on the defense. I think Iowa's going to have to do some blitzing themselves. And the key is not allowing Iowa State to get big plays, but you know, they're obviously capable of doing that. And anytime you send a blitz, that's a thing you got to deal with as a risk. But to me, at the end of the day, I think Iowa State, as you said, is probably a better team coming in. And going off what Farron said about, you know, usually the game's going to be decided on the field, if that's the way to look at it, it's hard to not think that Iowa State's going to win. So I do think the Cyclones end up beating the Hawkeyes. And I said before, I had a hard time picturing this team starting out 5-0 like a lot of people did. This is where I think the slip-up's coming.
I was going to say one last thing with Iowa. It's two, actually, I will say. Mm-hmm. Is special teams play is going to be huge. And right, our running game is going to be huge also. I think if we win a game, both of these two have to play well. And with Iowa being at home, special teams is always, mm-hmm, always is a key advantage that we always have at home. So I think special teams in a run game is what is going to dictate this game on Iowa.
And to that point about the run game, I don't think this is a game where you can afford Damon Bullock to be having 30 carries again. I think this is a game where that there has to be more of a distribution with, you know, and getting guys like Greg Garner, even Michael Moore, like getting them involved and getting them carries. Because at the end of the day, Iowa State is going to reach a point where they're going to key in on the run, and I would not expect Bullock to get 150 yards on them like he did against Northern Illinois. And again, it comes down to being able to do that and dictate time of possession. I think that's one thing Iowa can do in this game, and that could play to their benefit. But again, there's something about this team with Iowa State. It's just like they always seem to get – there's always that one game where they have a big win, and it highlights their season. You go back to Paul Rhodes' first year, they won at Nebraska. 2 years ago, they won at Texas. Last year, they beat Oklahoma State, cost them a chance of playing for a national title. This year, I think it could very well be this game. And adding on to that, if you look at it from Iowa's perspective, even if they don't win, we're still looking at this team as, you know, being a 6 or 7-win team going to a bowl game and, you know, having that. Whereas Iowa State, you look at the Big 12, the schedule is brutal that they got to play. They have to play Oklahoma. They have to play Texas. They have to play West Virginia at the end of the season. Kansas State going down the line. They have to play all of those teams, and it's something that right there, if you just look at it right now, you're thinking, okay, this team's probably not going to do any better than 7-5 or 6-6, and the only way they're going to get there is if they win this game against Iowa. So to me, I think there's more incentive on the Cyclones to win this game, and I just feel like they're going to make enough plays at the end that they're going to pull it out and defeat Iowa, I'm saying 21-17.
All right. I was going to say, after this game, I really don't see – if Iowa State actually loses this game, I think it'd take a lot of steam for Iowa State. Because I don't really see them winning two more games if they don't win
right.
this game, unless they just pull an upset – upset out of this world or whatnot, and it's gonna be a key game. I look forward to watching this game this week and observing this game and being able to get ready for the next week. But like I said, it comes down to special teams, the running game, the defense playing strong, and of course, home field advantage.
And I'll just add one more point too. Going back to the offense, you know that phrase that Rome wasn't built in one day. I do think that eventually, I don't think it will be quite like Rome, but I do think Iowa will get it click. As I've said, I think they'll get it clicking on offense eventually, but it's not something that is just going to happen in one week. And you saw the struggles last week. I do think that there's going to be some struggles here just simply because I think Iowa State has a better defense than Northern Illinois. I think it's going to show. And, you know, this is a game where that I do think more lessons can be taken that can be applied for when they do play, you know, teams later this month like UNI, Central Michigan, Minnesota, teams that I do think they'll be able to move the ball effectively against. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Talking Hawks podcast. Again, a reminder, if you want to become a member of HawkeyeDrive.com, is sign up. We have a 3-day free trial. We also have monthly and yearly subscriptions, $9.99 a month, $89.99 a year. Payments are recurring. It gets you access to all the free and premium content on the site. Chris, I want to thank you again. I want to thank Travis Hines from the Ames Tribune for joining us this week. Reminder, you can follow him on Twitter, CRowell34. You can follow me on Twitter at the BStyles, and you can follow HawkeyeDrive.com at HawkeyeDrive. For Chris and for Travis Hines, I'm Brendan signing off.